Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Humor Outcast Radio. I'm Donna Kavanaugh. We've had a little bit of a hiatus due to vacations and just so much stuff. But we were so glad as soon as we could. Our last show, we had Ruth Weisberg on, and we promised everybody, we got so many listens, and so we promised people, everybody who listened, a part two. And we had planned it ahead of time because Ruth is just such an amazing woman. She has so much going on. We knew 30 minutes could not cover it. So I'm just going to recap a little bit, tell you a little bit about Ruth, then I'm going to bring her in, and we can get going. Ruth Weisberg, she puts the multi in multimedia. She is a TV and radio commentator. She's a voiceover narrator and coach, a journalist, motivational speaker, and TV talk show host. The show at Radnor 20 Studio 21, which I had the honor of being on, which is called Storytime and Show and Tell with Miss Ruth. And it's such a fun show, and she has amazing guests on that show. And I know that show's going to start going boom, 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 boom. The audience is growing so much with it. She's a former Miss Philadelphia. She's a Penn State alumni. Ooh, go PSU. And she is just amazing. She's a pianist. She's just on everything. That was her talent in Miss Philadelphia. She played the piano. Anyway, I'm bringing her on because we want to talk about the audio, her audio expertise and what she does. And so many people are interested in this. So, Ruth, are you there?
I am here, Donna. I'm listening to this introduction. I'm like, who is this woman? I want to meet her.
Oh, it's
me.
Yes, it's you.
Well, yeah.
When
I said it's either an introduction
met.
Or a I said it's either an introduction or a eulogy. Your pick.
And so when last we met, it sounds so dramatic.
Yes.
In
our last
about,
episode, yeah.
Right? We were talking about so many different things, and we just couldn't get to all the audio stuff we wanted to talk about because we had talked about how you began, how, you know, had shadow traffic and all that other stuff, and we didn't get to something very important with what you do with audio and voice narration and voiceover and things like that. So I really want to talk about that tonight if that's okay with you, and I'm going to just let you go with it and tell me what you want to tell me, how you started or what you do now, whatever you want to do, it's up to you. So
go. Well, it's funny. People say to me, you know, Ruth, considering your life and your narrative arc, when are you going to write a book? And I'm like, well, actually, I'd rather someone else write the book. I just want to narrate it. So what happened was when I was on the air, I would work a split shift, which meant I was doing a morning shift for traffic and an afternoon shift, and I had between 9 and 3 in the afternoon to do whatever I wanted. And that was really the beginning of my foray into voiceover narration. So I'd get off the air at 9, and I would do everything from TV commercials, radio commercials, telephone hold messages, and just any other requirements in the studio, including audiobook narration, which is fascinating, a fascinating aspect of writing books and publishing.
And you just got into it just like that? I mean, how did you decide that this is where I want to be?
Well, that's a great question, Donna, because I never really set out to be a voiceover narrator, but when I got off the air at 9, I had 6 hours to fill. And as it turns out, somebody that worked with me at Shadow Traffic worked at WMMR. And he said, listen, I've got this production order. It's a two-person radio commercial. It's going to be for a restaurant. And the setup of the commercial is two women out to lunch praising the menu and the venue. Okay, great. So I did the commercial, and we nailed it in 10 minutes. And after that, I went, wow, I'm having a blast. And so after that, I just put together more excerpts on my reel, started fishing it out to different agencies and production companies and anybody and everybody who was involved in audio-visual narration. And that's really where I started making tremendous inroads. The interesting thing is one of those companies was a little billion-dollar pharmaceutical company around here, and they wanted me to do a narration. And blessedly, I have a cousin who's a heart surgeon. And I called him up, and I said, Steve, how do I say these words? What do these words mean? How do I break it down? I said, one word takes up a whole line on a page. How do I pronounce this stuff? And he worked with me, and he told me, like, the root origins and how certain words fit together. And they weren't scary or daunting anymore.
Greek and Latin,
so,
right? Greek
well,
and
they're
Latin.
Big, big, big you know, the kind of stuff you see if you get a medicine and you get a prescription filled and it comes with the insert.
Right.
Like that. like that, only more difficult. So, you know, all those big scientific chemical words. And this was a cardiac narration. It was for a heart medicine that was being developed.
And
so
wow,
I nailed that.
And kudos that you had a cousin for this.
Yeah, what a coinky dink, as they say. So I nailed that narration, used that excerpt from my tape, and suddenly I'm a medical pharmaceutical narrator. And that's really what my area of specialty is. For what we
really?
Call long-form narration. Yeah, it's anything that's longer than, say, 30 seconds or a minute, which is a typical length of a commercial. So anything longer right. than a few minutes, we consider it long-form narration. And so that's really what I specialize in. And so
you just sent out the
reel? I could handle.
So
yeah,
once you had your first gig, they knew you could do
mm-hmm.
it.
I knew I could do it. I knew I could break it down and everything. I mean, and also, I read medical dictionaries for fun. So when most people
are
reading graphic novels. Yeah, actually not, but I'm just fascinated with like certain words and why they, and then after a while you develop a pattern, like anything that ends in itis is usually inflammation. If it ends in O-S-E, it's usually related to sugar, like lactose, mm-hmm. sucrose, fructose, you know, your whole
right.
family of O's, the O-S-E, that sort of thing.
Right.
So after a while, these words aren't scary because I really understand what it is
what they
saying.
Are.
Exactly. Huh. And then after that, people are like, well, if you can handle medical pharmaceutical narration, can you read this novel? Can you read this book? And now, interesting, colleges and universities are big business, as we all know. And their
right.
ideal student is either a butt in a seat in a classroom or somebody taking an online course. And
right.
you'll notice that more and more classes are offered online. So you can be enrolled in a university anywhere, and you can
right.
take your course online. And so I started narrating textbooks, like college
How
textbooks.
Was that? Was that fun?
Oh my
was, did you
God.
Find that dry? I mean, what if you get, like, an economics textbook? How do you add?
Well, I do.
You do?
Yeah,
see,
I
like,
do.
How
I've
do
actually
you add
narrated
excitement
that.
Into that? Unless you're an economics freak, that's pretty dry stuff.
Yeah, you're not going to get excited about anything like that. However, here's where the challenge is. I mean, it's one thing to do a 30-second or 60-second radio or TV spot because it's short in length. The difficulty and the challenge with doing long-form audiobook narration is being consistent over time. You've got to sound
right.
as fresh and as consistent on page 219 as you are on page 2. And that's
so
really
do you
challenging.
Take breaks? Or do you do it over days, or do you do it in one shot? What's best for you? I mean, how do you keep that level of energy going?
Well, it's funny. speaking of boring academic economic textbooks, I actually had to narrate one. This is for a college in Bryn Mawr, and they train financial planners. And many of them, as
I know,
you know
what this is. My daughter used to work there.
Yeah,
can I say
it's
what
American
that is?
College in Bryn Mawr.
Yes,
yeah.
My daughter
so,
used to work there.
Yeah, well, I would narrate many of those courses. And so what would happen is that the professor would write the book,
uh-huh.
and then I would get to narrate the book. Now, the only thing is, after 2 or 3 hours being really close to the microphone and narrating, you fatigue. I mean, you know, you just fatigue. So
yeah,
what we typically do is do it in 3-hour chunks. I mean, because
okay.
when you're narrating a 300 or 400-page course, I mean, think about a typical textbook. It's anywhere from 14
mm-hmm.
to 28 chapters, let's say. And
right.
each chapter could be 10 to 20 pages. So that's a big tome. I mean, you could do bicep curls with some of these books.
Yeah.
It's really huge. So if you're trying to nail it in one day, you're going to fatigue. You know how you have morning voice when you first wake
right.
up? Or at the end of the day when you're really tired, your voice just sounds croaky and tired. You
and
can,
the,
really
the volume
tell.
Goes down, inflection changes.
It does.
Like
well,
you can hear
your
when
voice,
you're fatigued or not. Yes.
You can hear when you're tired. Like the next time you wake up in the morning, you'll hear your morning voice or at night.
Mm-hmm.
It usually goes into a lower register, and it usually gets a little raspy, you know, when you're
right.
tired. It's your body's way of saying, put me to bed, damn it. You know, just put me to bed already. So if you're narrating for more than 4 hours or so, you fatigue. The other thing is you get what we call punch drunk because in 99% of the cases, I don't see the material before I narrate it. They'll say,
really?
Book, here you go. Here. Yeah. they'll say, you know, here's 7 pounds of paper and read this. And
so how do you know, though, if
book.
You're not an expert with that material, if you're not an expert in economics, how do you know? Is it just innate with you now? Do you just know of inflection and, oh, I see this? And so do you? Does it just take over now because you're such an expert
pretty
at this?
Pretty much. It's pretty much like when you hand a studio musician a chart for them to play for a song. They immediately know, oh, it's in this key, it's this tempo, it's this feel, okay, I've got a modulation on bar 8. And, I mean, you just get a sense of how to read music, how to do sight reading for music. It's the same thing with narrators. And the funny thing is, your voice may be saying something on line 1, but your eyes are jumping to line 2. So it's
that's
as if your mouth is saying one thing and your eyes and your brain. So it's very challenging in terms of your physical resolve, your emotional temerity. There's a lot going on.
So let me ask you this too. You're a trained pianist. So do you think that your talent with music helps you with this? Because you just mentioned about studio musicians. Do you think because you've done music so much that you translate it with the narration?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I'm getting a direction. And as I said, I read this copy cold. I don't see it. And maybe the producer or the engineer will say, okay, on line 2, when you say transesophageal echocardiography, for example, okay, see how I just sailed that out? He says, we might want emphasis on the second word, not the first. So I will hear it musically. So when he tells me how he wants me to emphasize it because there's going to be a visual with it or it's going to be a bullet point that will be highlighted on the accompanying video, when he gives me the direction, I instantaneously turn it into a musical cadence. So, for example, roses are red, violets are blue. Musically, I would hear bum-ba-ba-bum, bum-ba-bum-bum. See, roses are red, bum-ba-ba-bum, violets are blue, bum-ba-bum-bum. And when I hear it musically in my head, that helps me control the pitch and the pacing that all go into narration. And it's interesting because when I teach voiceover narration, I tell them it helps to have a musical ear or think musically even though you're doing spoken word narration. It helps you give a rhythm, a pace.
Yeah, but I think that has to give you an advantage with this because it's not an easy thing to do, narration. And just having that background, I just think that it's like pre-training before you had like pre-training before you got into this.
Oh, absolutely. That's and it just really helps because of breathing. Because, again, many times the professors write the material, but they themselves have not read it out loud. You know, when you think about when you're writing a book, And you're checking what you've just written, I'm going to bet dollars to donuts you're looking at the computer monitor and you're just reading it quietly to yourself.
Right.
Allow me to suggest
I don't rarely
read it out loud
because you know what? I noticed this in my head when I'm writing humor, as you said, like the cadence, you it's instinctive. Like you have that. You know what you meant to say, how you wanted that sentence paused, all that kind of thing.
Exactly.
But when
and especially humor,
when you really
like
read out loud,
it might fall flat. Or certain words, like you need a short word for your comedic bump, like your punchline.
Right.
Or the rules of three, what we call the laundry list. Whether it's the comedic rules of three or side effects include, you know, the typical commercials where they give all the medicinal side effects. That, too, is a laundry list. So if you approach it musically, you will know the use of even dead air. I mean, sometimes narrators fix their heads around the words on the page. The white space, the so-called white space, from an audio point of view, translates into what we call dead air. So, for example, I was narrating a planetarium show for the Franklin Institute, and we were talking about Mars as being a desolate crimson planet. Aren't those lovely words? I call them high fiber words. So you wouldn't say, you know, the red planet. You wouldn't say desolate crimson planet. You would say desolate crimson planet. And suddenly it has dramatic heft because I'm using dead air and inflection. And I always try to visualize what the listener or the viewer is engaging with when I narrate. So these are all the forces that go into all this.
So now when you teach this, first of all, I bet are there a lot of people who would like to get into this, or do you think it's so specified? Oh, there is.
I mean, come on. How what person has not stood by the dresser with a hairbrush turning it into a microphone?
I know, but I mean, like, yeah. I would think you'd have to have a certain voice. Like me, like even though I do the podcast and stuff, I always say I have a high-pitched voice. Like if somebody calls this house, my house, and I can very much get away with my mom's not home. Can you call back?
That's really cute.
And they always say, and or I get, is your mom home? And I always say, I have a Mickey Mouse voice, a Minnie Mouse voice for radio. But so do you look for certain voices that you know
Well, certain voices, you know, when you get a job, they'll say, I need somebody who sounds as if they're in their 20s. 40s or 80s. So you don't have to be that age range. Like visually, if you're going for a part, you know, you want to look as much of the part as the part calls for. However, the beauty and the mysterious lusciousness of audio narration is that you don't have to look the part. You just have to sound the part. So if you are of a certain age, okay, let's say you've got grown children, wink, wink, nod, nod, okay? So even though you're a certain age, if you can sound like you're 8 or 9 years old, that's an advantage. That's a huge advantage. Or if you have a certain timbre in your voice, a certain raspiness or a certain nuance that we can hear, I find it to be a tremendous advantage. I really do. But, you know, there's different vocal ranges. You can have your high voice up here.
Right.
You can have your nasal voice up here.
You got your adenoidal voice, which is more cartoony.
But you have
your throat voice.
Yeah.
So
you
got your throat voice, which is here. And then you've got your chest voice.
You can do anything, though. Right? I mean, you don't have to. I mean, you can pretty much. You're such an expert at this. If they tell you we need to sound, someone sound as if. You can pretty much handle anything because you
pretty
you can
much
go,
yeah.
Isn't that that's amazing too?
Yeah.
See,
it's like
this from somebody who majored in special education, right?
Go figure that. Yeah. But you know what, Donna? I always love listening to people. I mean, first of all, I am innately curious about people. I want to know their story. I want to know how they roll. You know, what makes them tick? What ticks them off? I'm just fascinated with the human spirit. I'm like
too.
Forrest Gump.
That's me too.
I love to know people's stories, and if you don't know it,
you're going to make it up.
I mean, what I like to do is I like to sit on a bench and just talk to people. I just love talking to people and finding out about them. And I not only find about who they are and how they roll, I'm paying careful and close attention to how they talk and what they say. And many times you can get inspiration for different voices or dialects or certain vocal tics. So even if somebody doesn't have anything all that interesting to say, and maybe they themselves aren't all that interesting, how they say what they say is just as compelling. It really is.
See,
so
you take it to the second level. Yeah. Yeah, you take it to the second level. Yeah.
Yeah,
and
it's interesting enough, in this day and age, as we're more electronic and digital, where we're communicating with our thumbs and our keyboards, what's woefully missing is the sound of somebody's voice. You can really tell a lot about somebody by how they are on the phone or how they are in person, and that's what's really missing when we communicate through our phones and our computers. That's the one element that I hunger for. And is so, so visibly lacking.
And it, and didn't we even have this conversation when we were, I don't know, we were having mojitos or something. I forget.
Yeah, yes.
But we were, we talked about this, is that how our kids, their age group, unless we text them, that, you know, well, it's rare that we'll get the response back. It's not like they'll pick up the phone right away.
They really won't. Yeah. And I've got to tell you something. It's a sad commentary because as these kids who are growing up with these devices need to go out in the world and apply for a job and do this thing called an interview, where you have to meet somebody face-to-face, I think their conversational skills, picking up on body language cues, is really a sad aspect of that technology. Because you learn so much about a person when you can see their body language and hear what they say and how they say it.
Right.
So,
it's the study of human nature, and they missed that.
that they do. But I love making the printed word come alive. I think my elevator speech is I make words dance. I just love doing that, and I don't see the material ahead of time. And in many cases, if the material is difficult, whether it's an industrial narration for a factory or an academic textbook with great financial information, I may not even know about or understand what I'm reading. However, if there's a noun and a verb, that stands, you know, that makes a sentence more or less.
Right.
And you can pretty much pick out, like the notes on a piece of sheet music, how to play all this stuff. So when I teach my students, I say, I'm not going to teach you how to narrate this particular passage. I want to give you building blocks to narrate anything that is put in front of you. And it's like,
so classes do you teach? Is it one place where you teach? Do you offer it at different places?
I do. There's a studio in Narberth, and it's called The Voice Box, and we offer an 8-week class there called The Total Experience, and it really is the total experience of voiceover narration. It's taught with 4 different instructors, 1 instructor at a time. So of an 8-week course, I get my 2 turns, as do the other 3 remaining faculty members. And then I also mentor students privately, because when we think of narration, it's not like you're going to audition for roles or parts, although you could. Sometimes somebody wants to learn narration because they have to read what they've written. How many times, and I'm sure you've come across this, authors are wonderful at writing their books, not so much when it's time to promote them or do a book presentation.
Or do a book reading. I have to tell you, that's my weakness. Yep. I'll put it right out there.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's the one thing. I mean, it's one thing to write a book, then it's another thing to actually do a public book reading, and then you start choking on the very material that you wrote.
That you wrote.
So that I help people, if they wrote something, if they wrote a poem or they wrote a story or a book, I can coach them on how to handle their book readings. Sometimes salespeople want to be more compelling in their presentations or conversational skills or leaving compelling voice messages. So anywhere the spoken word comes into play, I'm your guy.
You're there.
See,
and I don't think that people realize all that goes into this kind of thing. I think they hear voiceover, they think, oh, well, you're going to, you're a cartoon or something, or you're doing like a commercial. I don't think they realize how many facets there are to this. Yes.
Oh, there really are. I mean, even something as simple as the messages you get when you get notifications or when you turn on an appliance and you hear something,
Well, what was your claim to fame of your voice with the telephone company?
Oh, my claim to fame is that I was the recorded announcement voice for what was then called Bell of Pennsylvania. It's now Verizon, as well as Diamond State Telephone in Delaware. I'm the one that told you, we're sorry, you must first dial a 1 when calling this number. Or, we're sorry, all circuits are busy now. Will you please hang up and try again? So I'm the person you spit and cursed at before hanging up. And
We should make you the new Siri.
I would love it. I would absolutely love
that. That's what
I
think. I mean, I know she's got a check on Twitter and everything. She's verified, but I think Apple should make you the new Siri.
And I think the reason many people are curious about voiceover narration or want to try it themselves is because we make it look and sound easy. They think, I could do that. I could narrate that. I could say, just do it, or we are driven, or I'm loving it. People think, I could do that. But they have no idea. It's like an iceberg, Donna. It's like most of the action and heft is under the surface.
That's a great analogy, because I think that's really it. So when somebody comes to you and says, okay, I'm interested in this, some of them have reels ready to go or some don't. I would think their first thing is you have to, I guess if they have no experience, take the courses so that they can develop the reels or they can create the reels.
Absolutely. And the first place to start is in your shower. Here's how. Okay. You want to read out loud. Don't just read the shampoo bottle. Okay. Read it out loud. So
bottle come to life.
There you go. Read the ingredients, because that will give you the big scientific chemical words, all the stuff that's in shampoo. And then read the front, because that's really the promotional part of the shampoo.
Right.
Because that's what's facing out on the shelf. Then when you turn it around to the back, that's when you get the instructions or the benefits of using this product. Read it out loud and then go one step further. Have the shampoo bottle talk to the conditioner. So what would a bottle of shampoo sound like? And what would the container of conditioner sound like? And then get into an argument with the soap and the loofah. So what I like to say, and this will be an opportunity to practice reading not only the written word, which is the copy on the shampoo bottle or the conditioner bottle, but your improvisational skills by making up voices and conversations. So it's not only the printed word, it's how jazzy can you be if you've got no script. Many times you'll get on mic and say, okay, you know, you're doing a video game. You've been stabbed 3 times. Give me 3 different screams. So there's no script to follow. You just have to come up with sound effects on your own. So this is an opportunity to improvise as well as reading the written word. So it starts in your shower or when you're sitting down to breakfast and you got the bowl of cereal, flip the cereal box around and read the cereal box out loud, including the side panel with all the chemical ingredients.
Right,
because
that's where you're going to learn how to say those words.
Exactly.
You're so funny. That's practical advice.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, but you do not need a so-called good voice to be a narrator. It's really how you play your instrument. It's like if you've ever seen Meryl Streep, she can be Margaret Thatcher, she can be the Australian woman, she can be Julia Child because of lighting and makeup. But if you stripped her of all that, she would just look like herself without makeup.
Right, and she would still be able
to
do all that. Right.
Exactly.
And the baby
Donna,
ate her dingo. Yeah.
Exactly. So you don't need to have a particular
kind of voice. No, the dingo ate my baby.
Yeah, the dingo ate my baby when she did the Australian thing with those funky eyebrows that she needed. So the whole idea is not the instrument that you're given, but how do you play the instrument? Can you do different vocal placements? Can you do accents or dialects or characters or unusual cartoon voices?
Now, again, because you lived in England for a year, or you know, and so that's where you started to get so much into the radio and everything. So did that help you? Like living there, you were able to pick up, the English accent.
Very much.
That
and there are many of them. I mean, you know, people think of, England, they think of like the London or the Royal.
The High English, and there's so many
the
dialects.
The Royal London. Exactly. Yeah. But then you go north and it's like, Hawaii the lad and your Geordies. You see? So it's different. And then I could put it up here and sound like I'm in the British world.
You just go right into it. So it's all those years of expertise. We're at 3 minutes,
we're at
3 minutes. And I could talk to you all night about this. We'll eventually do a part three, too. But so what would you like to leave to listeners about this, about voiceover and narration? And what would be the number one tip that you would give people?
My number one tip is side effects of narration include better reading skills, better listening skills, better conversational skills, better jazz skills. So oddly enough, the way to be a better narrator is to read more mm-hmm. books. There you go, Donna. Read more books, read them out loud, read everything out loud. Pay careful and close attention to those around you when you engage in conversation. Mm-hmm. Or if you're watching TV or a movie, listen to their breathing, listen to their pacing, their phrasing, their vocal register, and then practice and play with it. I always tell people, play with your food, play with your words.
Interesting. So interesting. Miss Ruthie, you always fascinate me. I love chatting with you. Or eating nachos.
Over mojitos. You know what? You had me at mojitos, baby.
So we have to wind it down, but we're going to have Ruth Weisberg on again, I am sure. I just adore this woman. She's so much fun and knowledgeable. And then in the meantime, I forgot who we're having on next week, but we are back. Humor Outcast Radio is back, so we'll have everything posted. But this show will be up on Friday morning on humoroutcast.com, and we'll have all Ruth's contact where she is, Facebook, all the social media, and if you need to get in contact with her or where she teaches, we'll have all that information to go to. In the meantime, we hope you have a great week, you have a great night, and we will be back next week. And please take a look at humoroutcast.com and all the wonderful humor writers that are on that site. The site's growing so fast and so so many talented people. And take a look at H.O. Press and Sure House Book Authors. Again, a talented group of people with wonderful work. Thank you, Ruth. Thank you for being a part of the show again, and we'll have you on again real soon.
My joy. Consider it done, Donna.
Good night, everyone. Have a great night.